Hello, and a British summertime welcome from Sunday to today's edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth area talking newspaper, the last programme of March as Easter fast approaches next weekend. So with Easter eggs at the ready, today is the turn of the Red Team again to bring you the latest news from our region, recorded at our Dawlish studio on Friday, the 27th of March, 2026. I'm John Townsend, leading our team of exuberant volunteers bursting with the joys of spring. I'm joined by four other readers this week, and as usual, I'll conclude with entertainment on offer at Pavilions Tynmouth and other local events for the start of April. So, with the latest news stories at hand, let's take a look at this week's front pages. Both the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth Post have the same main headline, Victory for Heart Care Campaigners, with a photo of Torbay Hospital where the cardiology unit is currently situated. Proposals to move it to Exeter have caused quite a stir. So, what's the latest development in the campaign to keep the unit in Teignbridge, Anne?
Well, I have an article which is entitled Victory for Hospital Heart Care Campaigners. Devon MPs have welcomed news that the bosses of the county's Integrated Care Board, ICB, have dropped plans to change the way urgent heart patients are treated in Torbay. Torbay MP Steve Darling said, "This is a real battle won, but we have not yet won the war." Campaigners warned that lives would be put at risk as a result of the initial proposals to move the cardiology unit from Torbay Hospital to the Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital. They said the extra time taken to get patients the care they needed, particularly in summer traffic and bad winter weather, could cost lives. Campaigners set up a high-profile heart campaign to get their message across and were supported by politicians across the political spectrum. Among them were South Devon's three Liberal Democrat MPs who raised the issue at Westminster. Torbay's cardiac unit is recognised as one of the strongest performing centres in the UK and was ranked fourth in the country for emergency angioplasty stent outcomes. Now the ICB says it will be pushing forward with a broader investigation which will have an engagement plan attached. Newton Abbott Liberal Democrat MP Martin Wrigley said the proposed changes were misguided from the outset and I am glad they are now scrapped. I am pleased to see that the ICB is now engaging with the community to determine local needs and that the new framework for neighbourhoods suggests that some of this could involve our cottage hospitals. And South Devon Lib Dem MP Caroline Bowden added, "I am glad that the strength of feeling from constituents, clinicians, patients, MPs and the Heart Campaign has been heard. This is very good news and I will continue to work with Steve and Martin to make sure Torbay Hospital gets the support and investment it deserves." Mr. Darling went on, "This reflects the strengthening of prevention and early intervention work in cardiology across Devon, for which I congratulate everyone who has worked to make this happen. However, it also reflects the strength of feeling and support for Torbay's cardiology unit from our community across Torbay and South Devon, whether it's medics at Torbay Hospital, patients or the Heart Campaign. I remain aware that elsewhere in the country we have seen the stripping away of services from some smaller hospitals and I remain on high alert to prevent this happening to Torbay Hospital, where staff undertake incredible services for our community. Loss of vital services would be extremely detrimental to our community, and I will be asking the ICB at their board meeting next week how they are working towards a more collaborative culture between the Devon hospitals and about their strategic approach to employment within more deprived areas."
Hi, this is Sarah. My first story is Body Found on Beach Believed to Be Missing Man. The body of a man has been found by police on a Teignbridge beach. Police located the man at Dawlish Warren on Tuesday, March 10th. The body is believed to be that of 44-year-old Robin Court, who was reported missing from Exeter, though formal identification has yet to be carried out. The death is not being treated as suspicious, and a file will be prepared for the coroner. A spokesperson for Devon and Cornwall Police said, Police searching for a missing man from Exeter have located the body of a man in Dawlish. Emergency services located the body on March the 10th during searches. Formal identification is yet to be carried out, but officers believe the person to be 44-year-old Robin Court, who was reported missing. His family have been informed of this development.
Dawlish drivers face more road carnage. The mayhem for Dawlish drivers is not over yet, with more carnage to come. While South West Water is nearing completion of its multi-million pound improvement scheme, work to replace gas pipes and upgrade the network is to restart. Wales and West Utilities still has several kilometres of old gas pipes to upgrade in the town, which will mean more upheaval. The work is due to start on April the 13th, but will involve a further closure of the main A379 from the junction with Elmgrove Road, where South West Water has been working over the last few months. This is due to last 2 weeks, but will be followed by up to 6 weeks of traffic lights on the A379. County Councillor Rosie Dawson explained, "The gas pipe replacement is essential." She said, "I know it's going to be carnage, but it is school holidays, so at least that's something to be grateful for." And she urged residents, "We can help to make this better by planning our journeys and managing our expectations." Wales and West had carried out some work at the end of last year along the first section, but three-way traffic lights, which worked on a rolling system along Exeter Road, caused major problems. Councillor Dawson said she had been robust to the energy supplier about the town's previous experiences. She said the traffic management last time had part of the road closed when it didn't need to be and was unmanned, and I had to get Devon County Highways Enforcement involved. During that work, verges were dug up, including hundreds of daffodil bulbs. It is understood these will be replaced. However, the work has to be done to ensure gas supplies to homes and businesses, and Councillor Dawson explained, "Wales and West is required to complete the work or be fined. One of the issues is that one of the main areas of pipework is directly at the junction of Elmgrove Road with Exeter Road. Wales and West will be paying bus company Stagecoach to provide a shuttle bus service, and details of this are expected to be announced soon." Councillor Dawson added, "This time I'm hoping we will talk more. It is good news because we need this infrastructure. We've had 15 months of South West Water. We can do this." She said from the second week, traffic will be able to access Elmgrove Road from the direction of Dawlish, but the A379 will remain closed from Sandy Lane. After that, there will be 5 to 6 weeks of traffic lights along the road. There are still 4 kilometres of gas pipe to replace. Devon County Council has insisted work on the main roads must be completed in time for the summer holidays. Councillor Dawson said, "We have got a way to go, but by July, the main roads will be clear." During the previous work, Wales and West said, "We'd like to thank the local community and road users for their ongoing patience as our engineers work to upgrade the pipes in the area. We know working in areas like this is not ideal, but it is essential to make sure we keep the gas flowing to homes and businesses and make sure the gas network is fit for the future." And I actually have heard this morning that the road Piedmont Place will be open from 7 p.m. tonight, so there will be none of those traffic queues that we've had recently, and also the work on the lawn will be finished by the 31st of March. So fingers crossed all round.
Ooh, sounds like a scoop for here and now. Absolutely. You heard it here first.
Boats severely damaged by fire at beach. 3 boats were destroyed in a fire at a Dawlish beach that is believed to have been started deliberately. Fire crews from Tynmouth and Dawlish were called into action in the early hours of Friday, March 20th, after a call was received reporting a fire near the toilets at Boat Cove. When firefighters arrived, they were met with 3 boats that were well alight. The crews got to work tackling the fire using both their 45mm and 70mm hoses, quickly preventing the fire spreading. Unfortunately, 3 boats were severely damaged by fire, with a 4th boat also sustaining damage, albeit not as severe. A spokesman for Dawlish Fire Station said, "The cause of the fire is believed to have been deliberate, and the police were also informed."
Teenagers' Road Safety Campaign Success. A group of teenagers from Dawlish College have been praised for their cause for road safety measures presented at a council meeting. The youngsters, aged between 13 and 15, presented a petition and were asked to speak to members of Devon County Council's Highways and Traffic Orders Committee about the results of their own survey. Now councillors have agreed a scheme for a new safety crossing to be designed by highways engineers by the summer term at Elmgrove Road and the A379. It was also agreed one of the zebra crossings on Exeter Road will be converted to a signal crossing due to a fatality last year. The changes will also benefit the nearby Gatehouse Primary School around the A379 junction and Elmgrove Road, although money to fund the scheme would still need to be found by the County Council. Their campaign 20 is Plenty started a year ago after one student was hit by a car. He was airlifted to hospital and suffered a head injury which required surgery. The youngsters carried out their own survey to show the real scale of the problem, which revealed 9 students reporting they had been hit by vehicles outside the school on Elmgrove Road. One student explained, "We found that over 3/4 of pupils were affected in some way in terms of road safety. That's 173 that have almost had a collision with a car, and 9 of them have been hit. What's even more alarming is that lots of those pupils at the time were in Year 7, and so maybe had only been attending the school for probably 2 or 3 months. When we think about all of the people who have been hit or who have close calls, it is worrying, and it's deeply concerning because we deserve a safe place to cross the road." Another pupil revealed some youngsters are now too scared to cross the road near to their school as they worry about an incident. Deputy Head Kate Bukowski said pupils have seen each other being injured and so have staff. She added, "I'm on duty every morning and so I'm outside on the road every morning and I see children between cars and I see cars pulling out and there are lots of near misses every day." The campaign was supported by Dawlish County Councillor Rosie Dawson. She said the young people were incredible and I'm so, so proud of them. "I presented a petition from our community with 841 signatures calling for improved safety on A37 Elmgrove Road. After design phase and consultation, the next push will be to find funding, but we are another step closer." She is also asking Devon County Council and Teignbridge Council to work with her on a scheme idea which involves using a nearby car park for coaches and parents to reduce the risk of congestion. Councillor David Cox, chairman of the committee, praised the teenagers, saying they made very pertinent points and the councillors were very impressed with their passion and commitment and maturity, and we hope we've got a way forward that they agree with. And there's a picture here of Dawlish College students launching their 20 is Plenty campaign last year outside the school.
Council offers pop-up business sites for summer. Teignbridge District Council is inviting businesses to apply for pop-up sites this summer. The council says it welcomes interest from a range of enterprises, including food and drink vendors, as well as more innovative services such as mobile saunas. Previous successful pop-ups have included ice cream vans, seafront saunas, mobile coffee vendors, and street food trailers. This initiative forms part of the council's asset strategy, which aims to generate income from underused sites while supporting local businesses and enhancing the visitor experience. Seasonal pitch locations include Bovey Tracy's Station Road Car Park, Newton Abbott's Courtney Park, Sheldon's Labrador Bay Car Park, and the Promenade in Tynmouth. For more information and to apply, visit the council's website.
Lido volunteers win backing of Town Council. Volunteers bidding to take over running Tynmouth's Lido have secured the backing and support of the Town Council. Say the Lido representative told councillors its aim was to have ownership of the pool transferred from Teignbridge Council to the new Community Interest Company. Now known as Tynmouth Lido Community Trust, the group believes it can run the pool to break even and possibly make a profit. But it has warned, use it or lose it. Volunteers were asked to speak to the town councillors after Teignbridge Council's ruling executive committee agreed to reverse its decision to close the open air pool this summer to save £74,000. Trust spokesman Paul Burgess told town councillors, "We are hoping to make history. We have one opportunity to save the Lido. Its future is at stake. The residents of Tynmouth want it to remain open, and the public are really behind us. A few have underestimated our strength of knowledge and experience to be able to run the Lido. but we have an accountant and a solicitor on board, and expert in previous pool management, and other Lidos across the country are supportive. He said they believe they could even operate at a profit based on expanding the current 18-week season, simplifying the booking system, and selling merchandise and food. Teambridge Council costs include management charges of £35,000. A trust would save this and get a discount on business rates, an overall saving of about £50,000 on what it costs Teambridge Council to run. Mr. Burgess said, "It won't be easy, but we have calculated we can break even by opening for 25 weeks based on the average revenue and cost per person." In the neighbourhood plan, the Town Council made a clear commitment to keep it open, and now is the time for definitive action. It's time to listen to residents and work with us to secure its future for generations to come and an opportunity to leave a lasting legacy. Councillors have been concerned about the potential legal and financial responsibilities of taking ownership of the Lido, but we're reassured the aim is that the asset is transferred direct to the trust. Mr. Burgess explained they were looking for support from the Town Council for when it makes applications for grants. Councillor Robert Phipps said, "I'm happy to commit to working with you. The Lido is a great asset." Councillor Mike Jackman said, "I admire the enthusiasm of the volunteers and, like many residents, want a safe place to swim." Councillor Joan Atkins stressed that the Town Council was not in a position to help financially at the moment. She pointed out that she and other councillors were unaware until the last few weeks that the group was working on running the Lido. She said, "We can't get involved at the moment as it's still a Teambridge Council asset, but we can give verbal support." Mayor Kate Williams said she was glad Teambridge Council saw sense and reversed its decision to close. Members agreed in principle to offer support for community-led ownership and voted in favour of the Town Council working with Plymouth Lido Community Trust so they may run and promote the Lido for the 2026-2027 season.
Anne has just left us to go and prepare your USB sticks, and I'm pleased to say we're joined by Molly and David, and I think it's David with a story. Well, you tell us what it is, David.
Well, it's been on the news and certainly on Spotlight recently, and it's Devon to receive more than £1 million extra support. Devon is to receive an additional £1.3 million from the government to help eligible low-income households who rely on heating oil cope with rising fuel costs driven by global events. Councillor Cheryl Cottle-Hunkin, Devon County Council's Cabinet Member for Rural Affairs, has welcomed the funding, which forms part of a £27 million national to the new Crisis and Resilience Fund. The funding is aimed at supporting rural communities, where households are more likely to depend on heating oil rather than mains gas. Funding will be available from April the 1st through Devon's district councils rather than directly by the County Council. Work is already underway with district councils to confirm delivery arrangements, which are expected to be similar to the routes previously used for the Household Support Fund. The increase in heating oil prices has been linked to ongoing global conflict involving Iran, which has pushed up fuel costs and added pressure on households already struggling with the cost of living. Devon has been identified as a priority area because of the high number of homes dependent on heating oil, particularly in rural parts of the county. The additional £1,303 will be paid to Devon County Council in the 26-27 financial year as part of the local government funding settlement. Councillor Cheryl said rising global fuel costs are hitting rural households particularly hard, especially those who rely on heating oil and already face higher living costs. Devon has significant hidden deprivation, and we will continue to press for long-term preventative investment so people are not pushed into crisis when global shocks occur. We are also calling for heating oil to be properly regulated, as rural areas are disproportionately affected by fluctuations in international energy markets.
Boy races are causing a headache for residents. Residents in Dawlish Warren are calling for action following an increase in boy races late at night. The problem is said to be getting worse after the installation of noise cameras in other areas, such as Exmouth. The drivers congregate at the Warren about 11 p.m. and then into the early hours. Town Councillor Scott Williams said, "It's been worse since Exmouth deployed their noise cameras. The boy racers come over here more often." Residents say the loud exhaust noise is a huge disturbance and a right nuisance. County Councillor Rosie Dawson says she is keen to meet residents to put together an accurate history to present to Tonbridge Council, which operates the car park at the Warren, and the police. One resident said, "It has got out of hand now, groups of cars coming, and it's happening more lately." Another said, "Last week in the car park at Dawlish Warren, they drove so fast a car crashed and they ran off and left it." And one witness described hearing loud race-type exhaust and turbo lag bangs from cars in the Weech Road area after about 11 p.m. on several nights over the last week. They were thought to be returning from the Warren. The exhausts have been described as so loud and making such a racket. While the boy races have been an ongoing presence at Dawlish Warren, residents say the problem is getting much worse. The noise can be heard further afield than Dawlish Warren, with reports it can be heard at Gatehouse. There were suggestions more noise cameras should be used as a deterrent. Alternatively, a dedicated location could be organised for the cars.
And my next article is entitled "Manic Street Sweeper Keeping the Hospital Clean." The Torbay Hospital League of Friends has funded a new road sweeper to support the upkeep of Torbay Hospital. The road sweeper, named the Manic Street Sweeper, is already in daily use across the site. Its name, a playful pun on the band Manic Street Preachers, was chosen following a public vote from a shortlist suggested by colleagues, with more than 500 people taking part, adding a bit of personality to a vehicle that plays an important behind-the-scenes role every day. Funded entirely by the Torbay Hospital League of Friends, the new road sweeper supports the practical work of keeping roads and pathways clear across a large and busy hospital site, particularly during periods of high footfall and challenging weather. Martin Tucker, chairman of Torbay Hospital League of Friends, said, "We are pleased to have been able to fund something so useful and visible. This is a piece of equipment that will be used every day, and it's exactly the kind of difference our supporters want to make." It was also great to see colleagues and the public get involved in choosing the name. It really captured the spirit of the hospital community. Jonathan Hawkins, Environment and Waste Operations Manager, said, "Having this road sweeper on site is already making a real difference to how we manage the estate. It supports our teams to keep key routes clear and the hospital looking well cared for, which matters for everyone coming onto the site. We are very grateful to Torbay Hospital League of Friends for their continued support." Torbay Hospital League of Friends has been supporting Torbay Hospital for more than 70 years and received the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service in 2012. The League continues to fund equipment and improvements that go above and beyond NHS provision, always with the aim of enhancing patient care and experience. And more information about this can be had from the Torbay Hospital League of Friends.
Decision on eco holiday lodges at Quarry due. An application for more than 20 eco-lodges at a derelict Teignbridge quarry is due to go before planners this month. Halden Quarry could soon welcome the homes of 27 eco-lodges as Wilderness Escapes and Hieronymus Gruff Limited application, reference 2402007MAJ, seeks to change the use of the land. According to the design and access statement, 26 of the lodges will be for holiday use only, with the remaining lodge existing for the sole benefit of generating income for a charitable cause. Devonair Ambulance is named in the document. It would provide a model example of how fully sustainable holiday development can be created and would allow Teignbridge to lead by example in eco-tourism. The application is due to go before Teignbridge Council planners on March 31st. Initially submitted in February 2025, a decision was due in the same year. However, extension of time agreements were agreed, allowing the applicants further time beyond the statutory limit to submit additional information. The proposed units will be of bespoke design and construction, built to passive house standards of thermal performance and air tightness, heated by an air source heat pump and spaced out, fitting around and within the vegetation. The existing workshop building on the site contains a bat roost, which will be retained with the sole intention of not disturbing resident bats. Wilderness Escapes' ethos is that the accommodation sits within the existing landscape and that visitors will stay within the landscape so to fully experience it. Electric car charging points will be provided according to the design and access statement. The charging points will be located with purpose-built power pods to be located alongside each eco lodge. The existing entrance to the site, formerly a quarry and contractor's yard, would be closed and a new discrete entrance created. The design and access statement goes on to say the proposal would create the first holiday development in the UK to provide all of the design, sustainability, community, environmental and charitable benefits that the application affords. It would provide a model example of how fully sustainable holiday development can be created and would allow Teignbridge to lead by example in eco-tourism. This is not the first time holiday lodges have been proposed for the site. An application for 42 holiday lodges submitted by RF Aggregates Limited in 2017 was rejected in 2022.
The next headline is Council plans to improve short breaks for disabled children. Devon County Council has agreed on plans to make short breaks better for disabled children and young people. Short breaks give disabled children and young people chances to join activities, build independence and social skills, and give families a break from caring duties. This week, Cabinet members supported a new Devon Local Area Short Breaks strategy for 2026 to 2030, along with a new way of arranging services across the county. The strategy is based on feedback from children, young people, and families about problems with the current system. Families have said there are not enough choices. Some services are missing, access is uneven, and there is too much focus on assessments and direct payments. The new plan will offer more local activities to more families, and extra help will be available when needed. Approved providers will offer more specialist short breaks, so families across Devon can get high-quality support. The council will improve information and advice for families, making it easier for them to find and understand support. These changes will happen gradually over the next few years using the council's current short breaks budget. There are no plans for extra funding. Councillor Richard Jeffries, lead member for Children's Services, said, "This new strategy will ensure that we are moving towards delivery of a coherent, inclusive and sustainable short breaks offer across the county. Our current model is dependent on direct payments and is not consistent with delivering the choice, accessibility or reliability that families tell us they need.
families have been clear. They want more age-appropriate opportunities, better information and more inclusive activities in their local communities. The council will keep working with families to develop the programme together.
And now, as your travel correspondent, a little nostalgia with an article entitled Vintage Bus Event to Return to Newton Abbot. Vintage buses are set to bring nostalgic travel to the roads in and around Newton Abbot in September as part of a special event. Experience nostalgia aboard Devon General buses as they return to Newton Abbot's roads on Sunday, September the 6th. Based at High Week Way in the town centre, adjacent to the Asda store, the event will feature preserved Devon General buses running free services to local destinations, including Chudley and Tynmouth. There will also be trips to Combine Teenhead and Eadford, or Eadford is that, I don't know, and, weather permitting, an open bus tour of the town. The event is being organised by the Devon General Society. It formed in 1982 to perpetuate interest in the former Devon General Omnibus and Touring Company Limited and its successors. The Society's sales stand will be present, selling bus, books, magazines, photos and memorabilia. A souvenir programme will be available in advance and on the day, giving details of the timetables and the buses operating them. And there's a lovely picture of one of those old seaside open top white buses. Well, I shall certainly be there. And going from nostalgia to modern day, I've noticed on the number 11 route here locally, the new electric buses. And well, they're something too. Oh, and now I've got it's just been handed to me. Another transport item, train station to undergo vintage makeover. A Teignbridge railway station could be brought back to its Art Deco heyday if a planning application gets the green light. Submitted by Great Western Railway, the application, LBC, is seeking permission for a series of refurbishment works at Dawlish Railway Station, including replacing the signage to mimic the Art Deco style of the earlier 20th century. The proposal is also seeking permission for a replica Great Western Railway notice board with replica posters. Oh, that's great, or that would be great. Built in an Italianate, or should that be Italianate style, for South Devon Railway on the site of an earlier station building, Dawlish Railway Station opened in 1875 and is Grade 2 listed. As such, it requires listed building consent, LBC. Teignbridge Council is expected to make a decision by May the 11th.
Council approved Sheldon Cookery School plan. A new cookery school to be based at a Sheldon farm has taken its next step to becoming a reality as planners approve its construction management plan. Submitted by the Towell family, the initial application reference sought permission to convert an agricultural building at New Barn Farm into a cookery school. It has been approved by Teignbridge Council in September 2025. It was approved. However, the approval has subject to conditions, namely the submission of further documentation, including a construction management plan. And a construction management plan has been submitted and subsequently approved by Teignbridge Council. As such, the new cookery school has taken its next step to becoming a reality. The change of use was inspired by the field to fork concept, which emphasises the journey of food from its origin to the consumer's plate.
And now a letter from Haroon Altaf of Shelterbox, And his letter is entitled Shelterbox Call for Appeal Support. And it reads, families across Lebanon are being forced to flee their homes as the conflict in the Middle East grows. More than 700,000 people have already left their homes after repeated bombings and evacuation orders. Many towns and cities are now under fire, and Lebanon is on the brink of a major humanitarian crisis. Family homes are being destroyed. People are escaping with almost nothing and taking shelter wherever they can. Schools, communal shelters set up by the government, crowded public buildings, or makeshift shelters. Many are already full, and some families have no choice but to sleep outside amid ongoing airstrikes. At Shelterbox, we've launched an urgent fundraising appeal to help fund our response. We're working with a local organisation and Rotary in Lebanon to support families who have been displaced. Together, we're preparing to support people with essential items that are urgently needed. Things like blankets, mattresses, food containers, solar lights, kitchen sets, and hygiene kits. Our partner is visiting the hardest hit areas to speak with affected families about what they need most. This will help us shape the right package of support. We've responded in Lebanon before, most recently during the 2024 conflict, and we are drawing on that experience to support again. And we're asked if we can support by sharing this appeal or donating. It would make a real difference to families who have been uprooted from their homes.
This next feature will be of interest to anybody who travels by train or would like to travel by train. It's a letter from Eleanor Thompson, the Royal National Institute of Blind People, and it's headed Barriers at Every Step. Rail travel is key to getting around for blind and partially sighted people, yet remains unsafe for many with sight loss. Royal National Institute of Blind People research shows barriers exist at every step of the journey. Planning, buying and managing tickets, navigating in train stations, finding staff, getting on the train safely, finding a seat, and more. Think about having to judge the gap between the train and the platform without being able to see it clearly. It's no wonder some blind and partially sighted people told us all these issues have conjoined to make them feel it's better not to travel altogether. It doesn't have to be this way. Operators can play their part by training their staff on how to support passengers better and make sure tactile wayfinding or better signage is introduced to make it possible to navigate more independently around stations. Fellow passengers can make a massive difference too, from choosing to offer a priority seat or help someone safely across the gap. Passengers can turn a difficult journey into an easier one. These are the small everyday actions many people already take, and when more of us do them, it can be the difference between someone travelling with confidence or deciding not to travel at all.
And now I'm just taking off my bowler hat as going to work in the city in London as your travel correspondent, and putting on my bobble cap as your sports correspondent. And I start off with football. Tynmouth AFC, this is association football. Tynmouth AFC travelled to Ilminster Town, and the spoils were shared at the Archie Gooch Pavilion in a 1-1 draw. This weekend, Spurs visit Oakhampton Argyle. Spurs, well, surely can't be Tottenham Hotspur, the London team that I used to watch, can it? Oh, no. Another Spurs, anyway. And they're on Friday night. And on Saturday, Buffy hosts the Crediton, host Crediton United, and Tynmouth are at home against Torrington AFC. Yes, I've just had it confirmed in my earpiece that it is not Tottenham Hotspur of North London. And we have another piece of news here. Teens suffer narrow defeat in Somerset. And we change codes to rugby union now. Tynmouth RFC have two games left to secure their South West 2 status after suffering a 26-21 defeat at Winscombe. The teens' third defeat in a row has left them three off the bottom of the table, which will almost certainly send them into a relegation playoff game if they stay there. They are 3 points behind North Petherton with 10 to play for. Tynmouth's last two games are at Penzance at home this Saturday and North Petherton away on the last day. Now, as Petherton are the side Tynmouth has to get ahead of to exit the bottom three, a grandstand finish to the seaside, to the season rather, at the seaside is on the cards. It certainly seems that way, said George Franklin, the Tynmouth captain. Reflecting on the outcome at Winscombe, Franklin said, "We were agonisingly close to getting the win, a matter of a few inches." Apart from the final score, the positives far outweigh the negatives. Our line-out functioned incredibly well. The front five were outstanding at scrum time. Al Moore was dominant, and everyone worked their socks off. Well, I hope they didn't, because otherwise they'd probably get blisters, but that's just my adding it. That performance should give us lots of confidence going into two must-win games. Tynmouth trailed 12-0 at half-time against Winscombe and were 19 points down before belatedly getting on the board. Deep into stoppage time, a stray pass was intercepted by Winscombe flanker Tom Broom, who hoofed the ball into touch to end the game. Jack Bowen, at number 8, was man of the match for Tynmouth.
And my final piece today is a letter of thanks to everyone who knew Susan Swain, nay Sally, the colourful character always involved in Dawlish Carnival. The family would like to thank, and where do they start, Pam, who was such a comfort to Susan in her last days. We'd like to thank everyone for the numerous cards, lovely messages and flowers, such a comfort. Huge thanks to Steve for the tractor and trailer and taking Susan on her final tour around Dawlish. Also the carnival girls, clowns and pinkies who accompanied her around the town and at the crematorium. And not least, everyone who lined the route to say goodbye. Thanks to Travis and Scott for acting as pallbearers with the family members. To Robert for the beautiful service sheets and slideshow. Also Denise and Chanel for the poem reading at the service. Special thanks to Richard Sanders for a fitting and memorial service. As one relation said afterwards, that's the best funeral service I've ever been to. And of course, to everyone who attended the funeral service, it would have been a bit quiet without you. Heartfelt thanks to Martin and Heather for making the long trip from Canada to say their goodbyes. Special thanks to Jen and Becky, who were such a help and support before and after Susan's passing. Thanks also to Lindsay at JH Way Funeral Services for making such a difficult time more bearable. Last but not least, many thanks for the generous donations to Rowcroft Hospice. You all did Susan proud.
And finally, something caught my eye in Christina Civita's regular archive that she puts in the Tynmouth Post. She's at the Teen Heritage Centre. An unfortunate incident from 50 years ago, Bank Street, Tynmouth, on the 2nd of April, 1976. Waitress is shaken in manhole fall. Anna Mingo, aged 18, was sweeping the rooftop at the London Hotel, now Carlton Court, when she tripped and fell into a plumber's manhole. She could have fallen 16 feet, but her 42-inch bust became stuck. She was merely shaken, but a bit shocked. "Oh, I feel all right now, and I can see the funny side of it," she said. "I've always been complimented on my figure, but Never dreamed that one day it would save me from serious injury. Ah, well, all's well that ends well. And so to entertainment on offer in the week ahead at Pavilions Tynmouth. This weekend brings five variety shows featuring local performers and choirs with tickets such as £10, and details are from the box office. This is to mark, by the way, the 10th anniversary of the Pavilions. Their box office is 01626 249 049. Then on Tuesday the 31st of March at 5:15, a streamed production from the Royal Opera House features Wagner's Siegfried. Quite a marathon performance of over 5 hours, including intervals. Then on Thursday the 2nd of April at both 2:30 and 7:30, the film is a comedy drama, Is This Thing On? Certificate 15. The following week, for the school holidays, on Tuesday the 7th and Thursday the 9th at 2:30 p.m, the animation film Goat is on offer, especially for younger audiences. Wednesday the 8th at 7:30 p.m. brings live music when Sarah McQuaid returns to Pavilions, one of the most instantly recognisable voices in current music. Shades of Joni Mitchell in a jam with Karen Carpenter and Lana Del Rey. Sarah McQuaid's lush, chocolatey voice combines with her engaging personality. A bit like the Red Team, really, isn't it? Should live drama and a medieval romp be more your thing, the Tynmouth Players are performing The Canterbury Tales at the Ice Factory on Thursday the 9th and Saturday the 11th of April at 7:30. Now, meanwhile, a few other dates for your diaries. On Tuesday next week, the 31st, Dawlish Community Transport are off to Tavistock, and the following week, on Tuesday the 7th, it's to Trago Mills at a cost of £13.50. A reminder of their number once more, 01626 888890. Thursday the 2nd of April brings an Easter beer and cider festival to the Blue Anchor in Tynmouth. Friday, Good Friday, there's an organised walk in Kenton. And Saturday, Easter Saturday, High Garden Kenton is open for charity. And also there's a shanty on the beach, dinner and beers at the New Quay Inn in Tynmouth. Easter Sunday, the 5th of April, from midday at the Clifton Hotel, Tynmouth, there is an Easter egg hunt around the grounds, £5 per child, including a tea or coffee for grown-ups. After Bank Holiday Monday, on the Tuesday the 7th, the Macular Society meets at 10 a.m. at Bitten House for a talk from the RNLI. Then the Dawlish History Society meets at the Manor at 2:30 for a talk about the works on the lawn by Southwest Water. It's also followed by the AGM. Friday the 10th of April, Holcombe Residents Association AGM in the Village Hall at 7:15 p.m. with a guest speaker who will be from the Children's Hospice Southwest. And a couple of other notices for you. A local driver offers his services and donations to the Talking Newspaper should you need a lift to medical appointments and such like. Peter Ward is fully insured and DBS checked, and I'll give you his number should you wish to use his services, and I'll give his email address. So his number is 07969 641 168, and his email is all one word, peterjward1943@gmail.com. Now, in 2 weeks' time, Sight Village is coming, it says, it's coming back bigger and better at West Point Conference Centre in Exeter. That's on Tuesday the 14th of April from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m, admission free. Sight Village is the UK's leading event for the blind and low vision community, offering a unique and exciting opportunity to discover the latest technology, products and support services. Attendees can benefit from engaging interactive seminars, hands-on demonstrations, and the chance to connect directly with industry experts and service providers, all in one accessible and welcoming environment. Our listener, Peter Taylor, is organising a bus for anyone wishing to go, and if you are interested, you can call Peter on 01626 871 175 to reserve a seat. So, with plenty on offer in early April, we come to an end of today's programme. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this week's Here and Now, as I close by wishing you a delightful week ahead and a very happy Easter thereafter. As next week is Good Friday, there will be no Here and Now, but the Yellow Team will be back to record the news on Friday the 10th of April. This week it has been the pleasure of the Red Team to bring to you Here and Now. Our producer is Sarah Williams, and our other readers have been Anne Hibbard, Molly Atkin, and David Quay, with Diana Coulson overseeing copy and dispatch. So it's goodbye from them and from me, John Townsend, until next time, when the Red Team will return on May Day. Goodbye.